Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast After Dark, the after show where we talk about a variety of random topics that didn't make it into the show. We want to thank everyone at patreon.com/filmpodcast. That's patreon.com/filmpodcast for backing the Slash Filmcast and also making episodes of the After Dark possible.
Thank you. It's huge. It's massive. It's wonderful.
Y'all are awesome. Yeah. And we are releasing these episodes for free through the end of 2020 to give you a little taste of this After Dark glory. But starting 2021, patreon.com/filmpodcast will be the only way to get episodes of the Slash Filmcast After Dark. And we hope you'll consider joining us over there. This week for the Slash Filmcast After Dark, what I thought I would do is once a month, maybe once every couple months, I will post something on our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmpodcast and ask people what they want us to talk about. And we will talk about the things they want us to talk about. And so I did that and I made a post and dozens of people chimed in with their suggestions for topics. So I am going to read some of those topics. I'm just going to go through this list and kind of this is very on the fly. You know, we didn't prep anything. This is kind of lightning round. We're just going to go through this live on the air. So let's start with Marley Orion Silverbrand, who writes
what
in.
What a name.
Great name.
Wow.
Great name.
Wow. Incredible.
Are you a D&D character?
Or a
Yeah. Marley Orion Silverbrand comments at patreon.com/filmpodcast. You guys have expressed movie theater etiquette multiple times, but I think it might be interesting to hear you elaborate on streaming etiquette.
Mm. Ooh, streaming it. There is none.
Okay, so I agree that like I think streaming etiquette basically comes down to what you agree on as a household. You know, it's more like a household rule streaming rule, right?
It's more you know, I think there's a big difference between streaming with your loved one and streaming with a friend who comes over, right? Or group. I mean, we don't do that. I don't do that. I know, Dave, you have a bubble and you sort of are doing that still, but it's been a long time since I've watched anything in a room with people that aren't my wife. But I think, you know, my wife and I, it's, you know, pause it. I need to hang on a second. I need to go to the bathroom. Yeah. Pause it. I'm going to go get some popcorn. Yeah. Pause it. I'm going to do this. If I have a friend over, I'm not going to behave like that.
You won't pause to go to the bathroom?
You're not going to pause it to go to the bathroom, Jeff?
No, I just pee right there. Like a polite person.
Just like a giant bowl. It's a
good bowl. Yeah. No, okay.
We all go there. Yeah.
So here are some things that
all
right,
go there.
Like I think you know when you have people over to your house or you go over to people's houses, it's good to kind of clear up what the rules are. Can I talk during this? Are people allowed to talk during this? And so on. You know, like I think that's a reasonable thing to do. It's awkward, but you know I never resist that because I think it's worth talking about that kind of stuff. Here's a question is. When you're watching, like, do you guys watch shows with your significant others? And if so, is there kind of agreed upon rules for, like, the fact that you'll only watch it together? Do you ever skip forward and watch stuff without your significant other and then need, like, they need to catch up separately? Like, how do you guys manage streaming with significant others?
Yeah. I thought we'd have some, like, new COVID era questions because this is streaming 101. Come on. Come on, people. We've been doing this for the past decade. Yeah.
How dare you question Silverbrand?
But listen, we all have those shows, right? Where I think we watch together. And sometimes there's the idea of, what was it? Binge cheating? I forget what the name was. But there was the thing where you would watch ahead, right? And basically not tell your significant other. And be like, oh, and then go back and rewatch it with them. And I've never cheated in streaming, but I have told my wife, like, when we were watching Watchmen, it was like, I had a bunch of screeners. I was like, I'm going to go through all this. Like, just that's me. And we're going to come back and I'm going to loop you in the second round. But like, she was okay with it. But yeah, I have not cheated. I don't know about you guys. You guys may be more
impure. Other than Watchmen.
Other than Watchmen. But it was agreed. It was It was an open streaming relationship. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. You have one of those fancy open streaming relationships.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you, Jeff?
I am in a unique position in that my wife can fall asleep at the drop of a hat.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I have that problem. Things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a certain leeway that I'm afforded based on the fact that she recognizes that she may or may not be conscious midway through a thing. And I am under no obligation to stop the thing simply because she dozed off. So there have definitely been times where I continued and, you know, hey, is it my fault that Netflix starts the next episode immediately when the first episode stops?
True.
No,
true.
It is
You're
not.
Powerless. You're powerless. Her
head is on my shoulder. It is as if we are watching together. But there are definitely shows that are verboten, you know, they are joint watch shows, and I wouldn't even want to go ahead because the joy is in watching it together.
Sure.
The
one that just popped into my head, a recent example is, The Great, which we loved watching together, would never have watched it without her, wouldn't want sure, to, had sure. too much fun watching it together. But there's numerous examples of that. But my wife also, she wakes up at 5 o'clock in the morning to participate in East Coast, where her company is based in the East Coast. She participates in phone calls in East Coast time, 8 a.m. East Coast time. So she's very tired at 10 o'clock. She'll fall asleep. And I have gotten to the point where I am just like, you know what? I'm going to keep watching this. And she doesn't get too upset. What about you, Dave?
For me, my wife, she is easily upset by things. And what I mean by that is, you know, she'll get really emotionally involved in shows, right? And if they're upsetting, which many shows that I watch are, it can often be overwhelming for her.
Yeah,
and so
curiously, she was just fine with Possessor, right? Like she sat down with a bowl of popcorn for that one.
She did not watch Possessor. She knew immediately that would not be something she'd want to watch.
You showed her the cover art, and she was like, "No."
I thought you were going to say she's easily upset by things, like for example, me pointing out that she's easily upset by things.
I was actually surprised that she was okay with The Nest. We actually watched The Nest together. We all enjoyed it in the bubble, and yeah, she appreciated that movie. But the thing is, like, also as a result, you know, she'll watch maybe, I don't know, 6 to 10 movies a year, right? And she knows that I want to do 10 times that amount, literally, right? And so, as a result, like, there's always this kind of tension of like, is this something we're going to watch together? Like, I'm always like trying to figure out like, hey, is this something we're going to watch together? Because if so, like, I can wait. Otherwise, I'm just going to blow through it tonight.
Sure.
But suffice to say, I think like after we figured out this dynamic, it became very clear that like I would have to press on without her. You know what I'm saying? So many times she's actually okay if I press on without her. But I will say that we watched the entire Crown season 4 together, and we're probably going to go back and watch season 1 through 3 together. So that's something
I think
we'll
they call that
together.
the hamster cut. I don't know. I was trying to do a Star Wars joke and I couldn't remember the name of the damn the machete cut. Fuck, I fucked it up. Anyway, the machete order of the
I was doing a Patreon hangout on my personal Patreon page at patreon.com/Dave Chen, and somebody brought up this idea of Benjamin buttoning a series, which I'd never heard of, basically you start at the final season
stupid
and like progressively go backwards in time.
Why?
We're so bored.
Yes.
You know, as a culture.
In what possible universe is that?
It's so dumb. It's an interesting way of watching.
I mean,
show.
You can do that with, I don't know, Survivor or something, but why would you want to do it? Why would you want to do it with anything serialized?
Yeah. Also, every like a drama at this point has the the opening scene, the cold open, and then, you know, 12 hours before or something. So they're already doing that for you, man. We're into backwards storytelling already.
Mm, yeah. Queen's Gambit being a great example.
Mm-hmm.
I saw this, like tweet on Twitter about like top Wikipedia English articles, right? Like top articles. And it's like number one, Donald Trump. Number two, like the Queen's Gambit. Number three, chess. Number four, you know.
Wow.
Or it was, there was Queen's Gambit on there, and it was also Princess Diana and a bunch of other stuff around the crown. And so it's really a testament to like the fact that people being really into these things, it drives like people to want to learn more about all this stuff.
None of us particularly enjoyed Queen's Gambit, and we're not going to get into that.
I really
liked
the Queen's Gambit.
I mean, okay, yes. Okay, so Devendra liked Queen's Gambit, but you and I didn't, Dave. And we're not going to get into that because there's a lot of emails and tweets that dissuade me from wanting to bring it up again. But I will say, if the lasting impact of that is that more people get into chess, then yes, rock on Queen's Gambit.
Sure.
All right. So let me clear up. Sorry, I got the crown and Queen's Gambit confused. But here are the top articles on Wikipedia from the week November 15th to November 21st. Number one, Donald Trump. Number two, Margaret Thatcher. Number three, Diana, Princess of Wales. Number four, Meghan is missing. I don't know why that's up there. Number five, Elizabeth II. Number six, Louis Mountbatten. Also a character in The Crown. Number seven, Princess Margaret. Number eight, Princess Charles of Wales. Charles, Prince of Wales. So that's like a ton of characters from The Crown right there. Then
these
number
are all the
nine.
Same people, these are all interlinked in the same articles. You know, they're just clicking around the same web.
Number nine is The Queen's Gambit. So it is up there. And then number 10, Princess Anne. Number 11, Prince Philip. Number 12, the 2020 presidential election. Number 13, The Crown television series. Number 14, Michael Fagan, a character from The Crown and also in real life. Number 15, The Crown season 4. Number 16, Jesus. Camilla, Duchess of Cornwall. Number 17, Prince Edward. Number 18, Mark Thatcher. Number 19, Anya Taylor-Joy. So the top 19 slots are overwhelmingly vast majority real life figures / characters from The Crown. And the Queen's Gambit related searches, which is kind of interesting to reflect on. Wow. Number 24, Joe Biden.
The things that are most important to us.
Yeah. The things that are most important. Anyway, I thought it was interesting, like how much streaming behavior is driving like interest in other topics. People, and I spend a lot of time watching The Crown, Googling the real life events that these things are based off of. Sure. So I definitely can relate. All right. Anyway, streaming etiquette. It's different for every household. It's mostly about like. Household rules.
Can I just list a couple of things, because I feel like this is table stakes, right? We've talked about this stuff before, but we're in 2020 now, right? And it's very different from all of the streaming stuff started. One thing I've started noticing, at least because my wife is my streaming TV buddy, she's just always on her phone now. It's not even just like a glance at a thing. It's like the phone is there and she's going between the phone and the TV screen. And it's not like I could be like, you know, can you please put that away in this house? We respect our television. I can't do that.
You want to, though.
I kind of want to. I can
hopefully, hopefully your wife is not a Patreon subscriber.
Yeah. No. She's no.
I agree that you kind of have to accept some level of phone usage now when you watch TV.
And I'm fine with some level. Like, we all do some level, right? We're all Wikipediaing or doing stuff. But I mean, like, just all the time.
Just it's constant. Like, it's the constant nature of it. In our house, it's generally people do use their phones while watching TV. But it is not. I would not describe it as constant. Does give me some degree of joy that, like, you know, that we do, like, focus on the things that we watch.
That's good.
I've never really thought this through because it's never been codified, but I realized that our little routine that my wife and I have sort of just fallen haphazardly into is that we get the kids to bed and we clean up the kitchen from the inevitable goddamn tornado that my kids have caused. And then we plop down on the couch and decide what we're going to watch. But before we turn it on, we have like 10 to 15 minutes of just phone time where we're just like catching up, getting stuff ready. And then we're like, okay, are you all done? Yeah, I am too. Okay, cool. And then we push play and then my wife falls asleep. But we do like a sort of informal, like, do your emails, check your Twitter or whatever you need to do before we start the thing. And I think that ultimately we're on our phones very, very infrequently
that's
when we watch.
That's probably better. That's a great way to do it.
Jeff.
I said, it's never something we like talked about or even, I've never even really thought that it was a process, but I realized that we almost always do it that way.
You have a good process. Like for me, like after the baby goes to sleep, it's just like me laying down on the bed and, you know, making my aching back feel a little better and staring at the ceiling. Like that. I do that for 10 minutes.
Do that for 10 minutes
and then we go down and then just watch whatever we can bear at that point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, I think the Kanata prep session, not a bad idea. Not a bad idea.
I love it.
Anyway. Oh, one other thing I'll add, by the way, is Netflix now has the, like in settings, you can turn off autoplay. And I would actually recommend this.
Sure.
Because typically what happens is when an episode of like The Crown or whatever you're watching wraps up, it just takes you straight to the, like, forget about the credits, just go straight to the next one. And it's very stressful. It's very stressful, right? And I don't need that stress. And I turn that feature off. And let me tell you, every time I get to the credits now, I am filled with satisfaction because I'm just like, you're not changing without me telling you to change, Netflix show.
You're in control.
Exactly where you're doing exactly what I want you to do.
You are the captain now. Yeah,
I am captain now. All right. Well, I don't know if any of that was useful.
Question one out of dozens. Here we go. We're doing great.
Yeah, dozens of questions. So we're probably not going to get to all of them. Okay. Tyler Keen at patreon.com/filmpodcast asks, what do you guys miss most and what do you guys miss least about movie theaters?
Mm. Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think I miss most the presentation, the huge screen and great audio. I think that's what I miss most. And I also, I don't know if I ever told you guys this, but I live across the street from a movie theater.
Didn't realize that. No.
Yeah, I mean, tick tock on that one. I don't know how long, much longer that's going to be. Not because I'm moving, if you catch my drift.
It's just going to be like a flat parking lot.
It may very well be. I mean, at this point, they're using the parking lot to do like drive-through holiday experiences, which is, you know, hey, very clever use of the space. Anyway, I used to oftentimes I would go after my wife went to bed. I would walk across the street and go to the movies. And specifically, like if it was a movie we needed to review on the show, and it would be like a Thursday, you know, the first showings, I would go on a Thursday night. My wife would go to bed and she'd wake up and go to work the next day. And I'd go to the movies, a late night show. And I used to love like the solo movie going experience. I'd walk over, I'd get like a little treat for myself, you know, a little, sometimes I'd get it at the little 7-Eleven that I was on walk, you know, that I could walk by. I could like make a little detour and go to the 7-Eleven and pick up a candy bar that's stuck in my pocket and smuggle in. But I'd always have a little, you know, a little treat for myself.
Yeah.
And I'd find a seat all by myself in the movie theater. And I loved that, just that little solitary kind of me in the movie time. So I think I'll miss that a lot.
Anything you miss least, Jeff?
Miss Least is dealing with the stress that we talked about many times back in the before times, the stress of that moment before where I would sit in the movie theater and be judging every single human being that walked through the door about how much of a potential problem they were going to cause me in this viewing experience.
Exactly the same. Exactly the same. That is my thing that I miss the least.
Sure.
I'll say the thing I miss the most is actually not the presentation, because, you know, there's a reason I have not seen Tenet at a drive-in movie theater yet, and that is because obviously drive-in movie theater is not the optimal experience. But I have a really awesome setup at home. You know, I have an LG OLED TV, a good sound system. Former Slash Filmcast sponsor Sonos hooked us up with some stuff, and this is a really solid viewing experience. What you miss when you don't go to movie theater, I should say, is those moments of discovery along with the crowd, you know, the collective moments of, wow, we all just witnessed something incredible, or we're watching a movie for the 100th time together and we all know like best lines in the movie and everything like that. And it's those moments of collective experience with strangers that I kind of miss. So that's kind of what I miss the most. And what I miss least is the same as Jeff. How about you, Devendra? Yeah. Anything?
I feel like
yours were both the strangers in the theater.
Correct. Correct. The solution and cause of all of solution to and cause of all of my problems at the theater.
I think that's what it all really comes down to as well, right? Because the thing I don't miss is rude people. I think that's it. That's what you guys are basically saying. But I think I miss every single thing else. Like I miss the overpriced popcorn. I miss the lines that it takes to get into something. Like, and even the rude people. Like, I do feel like once we can get back into things and once we hopefully have some sort of semblance of movie going again, I'm just gonna like not care as much, you know, about somebody being super annoying next to me, just because I will remember the year when we had nothing, you know? So it's like, I mean, I've always been pretty chill about it. Like the worst is I would move my seat or something, you know, but it's never been that bad for me. But yeah, I miss everything about it, guys. Like the crowd experience. I miss the presentation. I have a great setup at home. I have a great sound system and a projector and a big TV and everything, but that's not going to, you know, replace a Dolby theater. The size of that screen, the immensity of it, or a true IMAX screen, you know, and going and seeing something in that, watching Interstellar in full IMAX is a fundamentally different experience than, you know, watching at home. It doesn't matter how big your TV is, because the movie is formatted completely differently for that thing. So I will miss all that, and hopefully we'll get some semblance of that back, you know, once the vaccine is out and distributed and everything. Yeah.
All right. Great question. That was from Tyler Keene. Mitch from patreon.com/filmpodcast asks, best time travel movies/episodic television of all time.
Now, Back to the Future for me is probably in there.
Sure. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Back to the Future is in there. Anything else come to mind for you guys? I'll list a few. Yeah, go ahead.
The Lost episode that was entirely rooted around.
That's really good. Yeah, that's really good.
Was that The Constant?
What it's called The Constant, you said?
The second to last season.
The Constant, yeah. Like, that was towards the end when, like, we had pretty much given up on Lost, and then all of a sudden they were just giving us these, like, heartbreaking, perfect stories, and The Constant was very much about time travel. But about movies, you know, like freaking Time Crimes is phenomenal. And I'll always have a soft spot for that. And also the movie Triangle, which I believe we've talked about before, the Australian one about the, like, was that Melissa George, the like semi horror movie. And that was fantastic too. Yeah. There's so many good things. Primer. Yeah.
Primer's in my top, however many. Yeah.
Great examples. Okay.
Looper.
Mm-hmm. What did you say?
Looper.
Yeah,
Ryan Johnson movie.
Yeah, Ryan Johnson movie. Solid. Okay, I'm gonna throw this out there, guys. Mm-hmm. Cause and Effect from season 5 of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Yeah,
sure.
I think I remember that one. That's the one where they see the previous versions of the Enterprise.
I think so. Hold on. Maybe I'm getting this wrong. The wrong one. Maybe I'm thinking. No, sorry. That's a good one as well. I'm thinking of Yesterday's Enterprise. Okay. Mm. Sorry, I apologize. Yesterday's Enterprise, season 3, episode 15. Okay. In this episode, the Starship Enterprise encounters. I'm reading from Wikipedia here. Encounters a rift in space time while on a routine mission, and they find a heavily damaged USS Enterprise C. A ship believed to have been destroyed more than 2 decades earlier, right? And when the Enterprise C comes through the portal, everything around them changes, and the Enterprise D, that, you know, the main ship, becomes a warship. Do you guys know? Have you seen this episode? Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I don't remember it very well, but I have seen it.
Okay, so what was amazing about this episode of Star Trek is that, essentially, you find out that the Enterprise C was, like, doing a very important mission that was going to improve the relationship between the Federation and Klingons, right? And even though the Enterprise-C was doomed, they were in a doomed situation, they were going to die, the fact that they died made a difference because Klingons really value that kind of stuff, you know, the honor and such. And it helped to salvage the you know, Federation-Klingon relationships for a long time. But without the Enterprise-C dying in that battle, Klingons and the Enterprise and the Federation, or they went to war. And so, like, the fact that, you know, the ship came through and they no longer did it, like, they went to war. And what was amazing about this episode is Tasha Yar, a character that was killed off in season one of Star Trek: Next Generation, I remember this episode.
Yeah. They brought her back.
They brought her back. Now, Tasha Yar, there was, like, you know, there was, I think, my understanding, some sexism going on and also some contractual disputes. But because they couldn't come to an agreement, she was unceremoniously killed off from the first season of Star Trek, The Next Generation, right? But she comes back because in the alternate timeline in which the Starship Enterprise becomes a warship, they would have never gone on the away mission in which Tasha Yar died, right? So Tasha Yar is back in this episode and makes the decision to go back with the Enterprise-C into the time and not, like, into the rift or whatever the hell, and go back in time. Because basically she says, like, hey, my understanding is that I died in the alternate universe. Like, because, by the way, Whoopi Goldberg, who plays Guinan, is able to see through time and tell people things.
Sure, sure.
And she, like, talks to her and is like, hey, my understanding is that my death in the alternate timeline was, like, a meaningless one, right? It was a meaningless death for no reason. At least now, if I go back in time, my death will mean something. The sacrifice will mean something. And so she goes back in time and goes to the Enterprise-C, and then everything goes back to normal. And I just thought that was such an interesting way of being like, hey, we kind of fucked up, like, this character death, right? And so then now we're introducing this time loop thing, and we're bringing the dead character back, and we're going to use the plot to actually redeem that character's death. So I thought that was brilliant.
That's pretty good.
And it's a good episode overall. So anyway.
Well, I want to shout out two more things.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk about yesterday's Enterprise. Season 3, episode 15.
Okay, I just said primer and left it at that. But good on you for that.
That's how you're supposed to do it, Jeff. But I do want to shout out to Predestination, the Spielberg Brothers movie from 2014, which I really love. Ethan Hawke as a temporal agent. And that was the first movie I saw Sarah Snook in, who is now in, you know, Succession and a bunch of things. So love that quite a bit. And also a show that probably nobody has seen. I would be shocked if any of our listeners really, really check this out. But this was a Journeyman on NBC. It's a 2007 show from Kevin Falls, starring Kevin McKidd, about a guy who's basically going back in time to help people. It's very Quantum Leap-esque, but there was a bit of, like, the time traveler's wife to it, because there's this whole thing of how his previous the woman he used to love had died, but he's able to go back in time and see her, but he still loves his wife, and it's a whole thing. So it was a really powerful, great show. And also I love Kevin McKidd. If you guys ever saw Rome, he was a fantastic star in that, and that was, like, the precursor to, you know, everything on HBO. That was a precursor to Game of Thrones and everything they're doing now.
There's one more movie that I have to mention that I absolutely adore. I think it's way underrated, and it is one of the great time travel movies, I think, ever. And it's called About Time.
Yeah.
And it's a time travel rom-com, and it is wonderful, wonderful.
All right. Well, I think that's a lot of answers for you about favorite time travel things. I love time travel movies, and I love the concept. Oh, you know, I mean, I don't know if this even counts as a time travel movie, but Groundhog Day, maybe, you know?
Nah, I think it's its own subgenre.
It has created its own genre.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't even know how I feel about this question, but let's do one or two more questions here. Justin Cassinator. Mm-hmm. In the spirit of coming out of a 100-plus-day lockdown here in Melbourne, and 15 consecutive COVID-free days. He's just rubbing it in our face.
Wow. Yeah, it's not even subtle.
We can now go see Tenet in cinemas, but I have three choices. 70 millimeter 4K digital or 1570 IMAX?
Get out of here. Just can I just delete this question?
Would love a nerd discussion about which version to see and why. I mean,
also they're heading into summer right now, so he's probably going out and swimming and having a great old time.
Yeah, I mean, I have some friends in Australia, and basically everything is normal. Like, yeah, life is normal there.
It's amazing what happens when you have competent leadership, you know?
It's it is like looking at another timeline. It is funny. Like, we have all these shows about alternate timelines. It's like, oh, you could just look around and be like, Taiwan's doing pretty well. Everyone's doing pretty good, except
for us. Extraordinary how many people don't look at it that way, though. They're like, well, it was inevitable. What, nothing could have been done. It's nothing comparable to those places in here. It's just like, what the
fuck? It is shocking. You know, that's the thing is like, nothing will ever convince people. Let me put it a different way. I think that to go way off. I mean, Justin Castanader, this question is an insult. Let me just put that out there.
How dare you?
No, no.
How dare you?
How dare you, but also can I be you? I want to be you.
How dare you, but also can we switch places? But I think that's something I've been struck by over the course of the last couple, like decade or so, right? In American life is how many people cannot imagine life being better than it is, right? Like they cannot imagine a different world in which things are better. And I think it's shocking the lack of imagination that Americans have. Maybe imagination is not the right word. Maybe
because they seem to have imagination ability, in other areas.
Yeah, you know, the ability to conceptualize a better world, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But things like, we just have to live with a world in which children can be slaughtered by madmen in schools, right? Like, sure. We just have to accept that this is part of our life. We have to accept that, hey, yes, like no one could have done a better job than President Trump did about COVID. You know, like this is just how he's handling it as best as he possibly could have. Like, no one can imagine a better way to handle this thing.
Right.
And I have just been, this is ultimately our challenge. The challenge to us in the modern era is to imagine a life that is better than the one we already have and to do everything we can to make it happen. And not in a selfish way. I mean, to create a world that is better for us and for our children. Mm-hmm. And there's many people who have already given that up. And I think that we should take that task on. So in response to your question, Justin, 1570 IMAX.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, always the IMAX. Like, if you could get the real IMAX, then yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. 1570. No
guess what? No question. I guess what I mean to say is that's good. That's great.
But I am curious. I mean, Tenet's going to come out in a few. We are weeks away from the release of Tenet in home video.
Dude, we're going to see Tenet. We're going to see Wonder Woman. We're going to see all these movies very soon.
The Pixar movie Soul is going to come out as well. We're going to see all this stuff in the span of a month. How are you going to watch Tenet? I've pre-ordered the 4K UHD from Best Buy.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm really eager to watch it in that format.
I'm definitely going that route. And I talked about the ultra short throw projector stuff before. I'm currently setting one up to test in my basement. So really looking forward to checking out some of these movies on a 100-inch screen.
Jeff, I assume you're just going to stream that thing on your Roku 1080p device.
How dare you? I have the Roku 4K. How dare you? How dare you think that I watch things in 1080p? How dare you?
He has all the P's.
Yeah, come on. I got 4K of the P's.
But you have not answered the question yet.
I will watch it in the streaming service that is most convenient to me.
Yeah, I notice you like hop around, right? Like sometimes you use like the Apple and the Prime
Video.
That's
the magic of the Roku, dude, is that you search in the Roku and then it shows you a list of all the places and the prices that they're asking.
Why make a decision when the Roku can decide for you?
Just
right?
Let the Roku do it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why that is to be mocked. It seems like a brilliant solution to the problem.
I mean, it depends on what you're doing, right? If you're trying to build a library, right, of actual purchases and stuff, then it's like you kind of want those all tidy place. Although, movies everywhere kind of helps with that too. Yeah,
I'm in a post ownership world.
All right, last question. This one comes in from Sean Lucero or Lucero. Lucero, I think. I'm going to say Lucero. Mm-hmm. So Sean asks, the twin movie phenomenon and which ones you prefer? Deep Impact and Armageddon, The Jungle Book and Mowgli, A Bug's Life and Ants, etc. Okay. So twin movies, for those who don't know, it's a situation where two movies come out in a, within a very short period of time, like from each other, where the movies are about extremely similar topics, right? And so this has happened many, many times through history.
Didn't we have a guy who literally created a podcast on that very topic?
Was it that? There was a guy who created a podcast about body swap movies.
No, I think there was also a friend of the show who created a podcast all about the twin movie thing. But I could be wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
There's
Am I wrong? Twin movies
with Ben and Gabe. But yeah. I don't remember any of this.
Twin movies, Ben, Gabe. Let me look at that. I'm Googling twin movies. Oh, yeah. Okay. You're right. Ben Phelps.
Yeah.
Created a podcast called Twin Movies with Ben and Gabe.
There you go.
So here's what we're going to do, guys. Okay. I am going to read off a bunch of these movies.
Oh, no.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want you to say which one of them you prefer. Now, it's very it's very likely you have not seen both of these movies, right? In the case, right? Like in many cases, you will not have seen both of them.
Because why would you?
That said, I want you to express a preference. I want you to express preference anyway.
Yeah. Okay? Based on zero knowledge. Yeah. We usually
titles.
Do.
It's titles.
Yeah,
come on.
I like it.
Yeah, it's titles. Okay. Okay. Okay.
In here concept.
We go. Okay. I'm going to actually take all these from Twin Movies with Ben and Gabe, because they compare these to each other.
Thank you.
All right. All right. Here we go. Their first episode. Deep Impact versus Armageddon. Classic twin movie.
Deep Impact is the better movie.
Deep Impact.
It's actually the better movie.
It's
truly
a genuinely good movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Disagree.
I know.
I'm going to say Armageddon.
How many versions of Armageddon do you own? As I recall.
The answer is not enough. I remember the first time I got the Criterion version of Armageddon.
Yep. I remember because I was there, I think. Yeah.
And I there was an essay in the Armageddon book that really kind of opened my mind to what film essays could be.
Because was he like Michael Day's Wesleyan film professor?
Yes,
or something?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So every Criterion disc has like an essay written about it, right? And the Armageddon one, I was like, okay, let me read you a little bit from the Armageddon essay on Criterion. Okay. It is true that Armageddon, a perfect example of Bay's work, illustrates his take no prisoners form of storytelling, in which he trusts the audience to figure things out. Yes, it gives audiences a lot to absorb. Yes, it cuts quickly from place to place, person to person, event to event. But it is never confusing, never boring, and never less than a brilliant mixture of what movies are supposed to do. Tell a good story, depict characters through active events, invoke an emotional response, and entertain simply and directly without pretense.
And blow shit up.
End quote. In conclusion, Criterion Collection, release Armageddon on Blu-ray, cowards. Thank you for coming to my second TED Talk. Okay. Second example. Dark City versus The Matrix.
That's barely
The Matrix.
A twin
movie. It's got to be The Matrix because of how influential it is, right?
Yeah.
It's a better movie.
I really like Dark City.
Dark City
is
pretty amazing.
For Dark City. I love Dark City, but The Matrix is my pick here. But I also don't, even thematically, they're not that similar. It's just aesthetically, and they shared some sets. I never got the huge comparison.
Thematically, they're extremely similar. It's all about this, like, there's an underworld, like, where these people are manipulating the world, and the one guy knows the truth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Dante's Peak versus The Volcano. Have you guys seen, or versus Volcano? Have you guys seen both, by any chance?
The one with Pierce
Dante's
Brosnan.
Peak was the one with Pierce Brosnan,
yes,
and Volcano is the one with
Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones, yeah. Mm. 1990, I want to say two, three, something?
Yeah, but, yeah, we're running.
You're really going far on this one, yeah.
I have definitely seen both of them.
Yep.
I could not tell you any distinguishing things about either of them.
1997, by the way.
Wow, I was really off. Wow.
Here are the only two facts I know about these movies, other than that Pierce Brosnan and Linda Hamilton's in Dante's Peak and Tommy Lee Jones' Armageddon, is I just remember that Dante's Peak is about like a pretty localized volcano, and Volcano is about a volcano that's going to destroy L.A. in its entirety. And the only thing I remember about Volcano is Tommy Lee Jones's death scene. I'm pretty sure he like jumps onto a pool of magma and like either throws something out of the pool or like saves someone's life. But he basically jumps into this pool of magma and like burns alive, sinking slowly into this pool of lava.
He gives a thumbs up at the end though, right?
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. That's the only thing I remember. So anyway.
I mean, Dante's Peak, not as good a title as Volcano, if you're talking about Volcano.
I disagree.
Volcano,
I think Dante's Peak is very memorable, and Volcano is
more
very
intriguing.
Generic.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting.
The Prestige versus The Illusionist.
Oh, The Prestige.
It's got to be Prestige. Prestige is like one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah. Right. Illusionist is not very good. Mm-hmm. My opinion. Illusionist is Ed Norton, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's do like a couple more here. Let's see. Okay, this is an interesting one. I would not have thought these were twin movies. Like, this is the thing about this podcast, twin movies with Ben and Gabe, is I'm not, when I look at this, I'm not always like, oh, these are twin movies. Like, one that definitely is twin movie is like The Score and Heist. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen either of these films, but The Score and Heist, I remember those came out like one summer or something. I don't know if you guys have seen either of those, but okay, here's a good twin movie that I would not have thought of, but is actually a pretty good twin movie set. Gone in 60 Seconds versus The Fast and the Furious.
I remember those both coming out very close to one another.
Fast and the Furious all the way. Yeah,
that is the definition of twin movies, Jeff.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's what I mean. I do remember that. I'm bolstering the, you said it, I wouldn't think of those.
Yeah.
You know what? There's a definite chance I have not seen Gone in 60 Seconds.
Mm. It's you're not missing anything, Jeff.
Yeah. Gone in 60 Seconds had what, in my opinion, was one of the best movie trailers I've ever seen.
Yes, good
where
trailer.
Because there's, what was great about the Gone in 60 Seconds movie trailer was there was a little countdown clock.
Oh, in 60, the bottom, 60, huh?
It was counting down from 60. It's like, here's how you steal a car in 60 seconds.
That's a way better concept for a movie than Fast and the Furious, right? The idea that these people are so good at stealing cars, all you got to give them is 60 seconds and they'll steal any car in the world. That's a pretty cool idea for a movie.
But Jeff, what if they were stealing combination DVD and VCRs?
Unfortunately, I thought Gone in 60 Seconds was trash. Like, I did not like that.
Yeah,
I was
it's
so
not
psyched.
Good.
I was so psyched for that movie.
I can see the cover. I can see the poster with Nicolas Cage on it in my head so vividly, but I don't think I've ever seen the movie.
Whereas The Fast and Furious obviously not only unexpectedly spawned a billion-dollar franchise, but there's many great moments in that movie. Like, it don't matter.
Like, it actually has good car shit.
It had
whereas
good
Gone
car
60
things.
Seconds
yeah.
doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. It has, like, the car, the Honda Civic going underneath the truck and everything like that. It's really good. It's really good.
It's weird to say, by the way. Talk about, like, theater moments. But when that happened, when I saw Fast and Furious in theaters in, what was it, 2000? 2001? What's the time for that? Or 99? It was around that time. But I just remember the entire theater just erupting. And that was the beginning of the movie. And that was the entire experience. By the time I left that movie, people were peeling out of the parking lot. I was like, that's not safe. But also, I feel you. Like, I understand why, because that movie kind of ruled. Yeah.
What was the movie where Cameron Diaz fucked a car? You remember that movie?
That was the counselor.
Yeah.
Which was one.
I liked that.
That
movie.
Was one you where you went against the grain. It was it was roundly panned.
I thought it was good.
I'm gonna close this one. This is one that probably, in my opinion, is the canonical example of, because you know some of these are like, okay, a volcano,
sure,
but like whatever. Like it's a volcano is like a natural event, right? Like it's that's fairly nonspecific. You know what I'm saying? Or they have here like Rough Night versus Girls Trip. It's like, oh, girls spend the night out, whatever. It's not that specific. This is the one that I'm always like, okay, the concept of twin movies is real, right? This is the one where when it first happened in real life, I remember it happening. I was like, okay, this is way too specific to be a coincidence, right? Like twin movies has got to be, there's got to be a reason explaining what the concept of twin movies, and there are business reasons that explain why twin movies happen. But this is the example. Do you guys have any idea what I'm about to say next?
No, because my example is Deep Impact and Armageddon. Yeah, I remember vividly when those came out.
It's not a bad example.
Yeah.
But here is one that I would argue is even more specific than that. The Truman Show versus Ed TV. Do you guys remember this?
Yeah.
Was Ed TV wasn't that a series? Oh, I'm thinking of Ed.
No, you're thinking of Ed.
That's Ed.
Yeah.
Ed TV was a Matthew McConaughey starring vehicle directed by Ron Howard.
Oh my God.
In which Ed Pickerney, played by Matthew McConaughey, a laid-back video store clerk, starred in a TV series in which a cable channel documented his life on a daily basis.
And it came out funny when Hollywood was like getting hip to the idea of something that is absolutely commonplace now, where we all just post our lives constantly for everyone. It's just like Hollywood is like, in the future, it's going to be weird, you know?
I'm guessing none of you have seen Ed TV.
I
have seen Ed TV, and I found it to be quite enjoyable. It was an enjoyable
better
romp.
Than Truman Show.
But it was enjoyable. Like, no, Truman Show is like transcendent, like one of the best films of all time.
Yeah,
agreed.
Ed TV is an enjoyable romp.
Talk about like you can judge these movies based on their cultural impact, right? Like where you say Truman Show, and boom, everyone immediately knows what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Whereas Ed TV is like
Ed TV. No one even remembered it was.
Was that a TV show?
I'm looking at Ed TV on IMDb here. You know who's in that movie? Ariana Huffington.
Yeah.
And not as herself either.
Yeah. A lot of people are in Ed TV. It's great. It's an enjoyable film.
A lot of people in it. It's like a whole cast of people.
Unfortunately, Ed TV didn't do that well. According to Wikipedia, the budget for Ed TV was $80 million, and it made $35 million in the United States. This was when you could make a movie called Ed TV about filming a video store clerk named Ed and spend $80 million.
In its defense, it predates the McConaissance by several years. So, it was just a little early is what happened.
Indeed. All right. Some thoughts on twin movies. Thanks for the awesome questions. There were obviously many more that we didn't get to, and we'll try to get to some of them next month, but we'll try to make a monthly post where we solicit questions and hopefully do one of these once a month. But if you want to get in on that, patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can submit the questions.
Great questions. Thank you.
Great questions. Keep them coming, and we will see you next week.